copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What we want to talk about today is the big picture. I think it's difficult and challenging, obviously, when we find ourselves hearing and learning so much about what it is that we need to do and how we need to grow our organizations. And kind of getting the big picture is really, really helpful in enabling us to be able to do what it is that we really want to do. And there's really value in perspective. And when we see a big challenge, it's always important to see the big picture. And obviously, the work that we're doing is a big challenge. It's challenging what it is that we do in development. The big picture includes our response to what we do, why we do it, and how we go about doing it, and who does what. Those are things that obviously all of us are dealing with in the context of our ministry. In the pyramid, and it's always been a great tool for us to be able to really show the full dimension of what it is that development is all about. And there are really four aspects of this that I really want to talk about in the context of our time together today. First of all, we need to know mission and vision, and that's four different areas of the area of development that we're going to be talking about. There are four things that we do, and let's kind of show them out here on the screen. You know, first of all, mission. Mission is at the foundation of what it is that we do. Mission statements basically are a series of clauses that are separated by commas. Habitat for Humanity, for example, is an organization that I've been a part of for the last several years. And their mission statement goes something to the effect of this, that we work in partnership with God and people everywhere, comma, to build and renovate homes, comma, to build community, comma, so that people can become all that God intended for them to be. That's their mission. And every organization needs to have a mission and a purpose. And so the mission of Habitat for Humanity is quite clear, and that virtually drives everything that they do. And one of the challenges that I really want to present to you is the fact that we really need to be involved in understanding, not just knowing the mission. We should be able to share it with anyone, maybe the elevator conversation that you have, you know, tell us what you do, and all of a sudden you're saying, okay, this is what it is we do. And in the case of Habitat for Humanity, we work in partnership with everywhere, with people from every organization to build, renovate, and enable people to really grow in their relationship with one another. So the next thing that we want to talk about is vision. And we're going to talk about this later in the session. But vision equals mission accomplished. And so if you're using the the fact that, you know, here's our mission and here's our vision. And those are the two very, very important things that make up the full picture of what it is that development is all about. On the left-hand side of the screen, you see strategic plan. That's an important part of what it is that we need to do in order to be able to grow our organization. We need to have a strategic plan. But if you had mission and if you had vision and if you had a strategic plan, the realities are you still could fail as an organization because something is missing there. And what is missing there is basically the development plan. In other words, you need to have a plan to make sure that the resources that you need in order to be able to accomplish your strategic plan are going to be realized. We're going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later. But I really want to talk a little bit about mission statement in greater detail. A mission statement is a mission statement is brief, and a mission statement is a brief description that states the purpose of your organization. We've talked about the Habitat situation and their mission statement, but the realities are, you know, you have a mission statement, and your mission statement really drives or needs to drive what it is that you do. We did something, you know, very successfully in our organization a number of years ago. It was actually introduced by the president of the organization. He asked me to come to his office along with other vice presidents and basically explain to us what the mission statement was all about. And then he gave us an assignment. And this is an assignment that you might want to consider yourself. the assignment that he gave to us, he says, I want you to know in the role that you play in the organization, all of you hold a role in your organization. I want you to come back and tell me what you in your role in this organization, what you are going to do this year. And so and I want you to come back in a couple of days. And so I did that. I kind of came up with, this is what it is that I'm going to do within my organization. And I came back, I showed it to the president. He says, well, you know, that's not good enough. He says, it's too general. I want to know what it is specifically that you're going to do in your organization this year in order to grow the ministry. Well, he came back again. He says, he says, go back and come back again. And I did. Eventually he came up with a statement. He says, this is what it is that you're going to do. He signed off on it. I signed off on it. He put it into the employee folder, and we went on. Well, I had 12 or 15 people working in my organization, and what it is that I was asked to do was to say, okay, in the role that you play, if you're the annual fund director in that role, this is what it is that you need to do. I want you to know, I want you to tell me what it is that you're going to do this year in your particular role that's going to enable us to complete and to fulfill this mission. So they did the same thing. They came back with me at first, and I said, no, it's not good enough. Go back again. And we did it again. And the realities are, at the end of the day, everybody within the organization, including not only the president, not only the vice presidents, not only the faculty, not only the staff, not only even the custodians and the everybody that was involved basically was asked to do the same thing. And what it brought to us is a sense of community, that we were together working and making a difference in really growing an organization. And it changed the whole part of what it is that was so important to our success. So it is generally a series of clauses. This is the mission statement. It needs to be concise and understandable. It needs to be shared and promoted to others. And the statement includes something that basically tells you who you are, what you do, and where you intend to go, and what you do and why you do it, and articulates the ultimate purpose for why you exist. So a sample mission statement, I'm not going to go over that just by virtue of the fact of the time that we have remaining. But I'd like to complete you with one more statement, and that's the word vision. Where are we in time? I don't even have a...
Tell you what, Jerry, let's do this. Why don't you go ahead and finish up vision, and then rather than going into a breakout, go ahead and finish up the strategic plan and the development plan, and then we'll do an open Q&A toward the end instead of having a breakout session.
I need a break because my program is still...
Okay.
So why don't you take... Can you take us... there's another part of this system. Let me see if I can... There's a part two of this that I've got to recover. I've got to go back to... I'm so sorry. I am so non-technical. This is the right one. Oh, no. Okay, we're just going to have to do this alone, and I'll just continue to work through this. And I'm so very, very sorry, and I feel terribly embarrassed. And I honestly have worked extremely hard putting these things together, and I feel like I'm not really reflecting that as well. Okay, we talked about mission. Mission is very, very important to the organization. You understand that. It really changed our whole area of life, you know, when we as an organization, when we had everybody in the organization all on the same piece of music, all determined to do what it is that they could do in order to fulfill the mission to which we've committed ourselves. Now, the second aspect of that, if you have that pyramid still in front of you, is vision, and that's at the top of the pyramid. And at the top of the pyramid, basically, vision equals mission accomplished. In other words, if we were to be totally successful in what it is that we've committed ourselves to do, what would it look like at the end of the day? What is your vision for an organization? I've been thrilled and had the opportunity in many, many organizations to come to them and to essentially share vision with others. And, you know, one of the great stories that I have is a story of Bill Bright. Some of you would recognize Bill's name because he was the president and founder of Habitat for Humanity, and not Habitat for Humanity, but Campus Crusade for Christ and Crew. And Bill had a great vision for what it is that he really wanted to see happen. In 1978, he said, I want to make sure that by the year 2000, this was in 1978, 22 years before, he says, by the year 2000, I want to make sure that virtually everyone has the opportunity of seeing the Jesus film in their own language. I mean, that was a huge, huge vision. And I had the privilege of being a part of that process for the 22 years in which it was involved. And basically we had the desire to make sure that everyone had the opportunity to see the Jesus film. And that was a great vision. It was very, very invigorating. We all caught the vision. And what happened, obviously, was a very, very successful program that by the year 2000, you know, virtually everyone within the context of the ministry was all of those countries had basically received opportunities to give to see the Jesus film in their own language. I think there are 23 people, 23 organizations just in the Organization Development and Fundraising Network. And within that you know, if there was a raise of hands, I can't even see that in my screen, but if there's a raise of hands, in fact, if you have known or if you had experienced the Jesus film, would you just raise your hand? I think there are at least a number of you that have seen that. And that was because a man had a vision. What is your vision for the future? What do you want your organization to look like 10 years from now? What's going to be different about your organization? And I think, you know, focusing on vision is going to be extremely important. So those two things are important, but there's still two things that are missing. On the left-hand side, yep.
Hey, Jerry, just real quick, let you know, Lindsay has actually put up your planning pyramid. So that's what everybody's seeing right now.
Okay, very good. Well, on the left-hand side, you see the strategic plan. And the strategic plan is the steps that we need to take in order to get from where we are to where it is we need to be. And so in the case of the example of Bill Bright and the Jesus Film Project, there were 22 steps. And so you could look at the left-hand side and you could do 22 steps that took us from where we were to where we were going. And so step one, you know, we were translating the Jesus film in India and China and some of the really large populations, that they would have the opportunity of being able to see the Jesus film in their own language. But by the 22nd year, we were experiencing, you know, this last year, we were working in places like Papua New Guinea and places in the Amazon valleys and so forth of Brazil. And basically that was the strategic plan. And so you need to have a plan for the future. We're going to talk about strategic planning, only because it's an important part of what it is that we really need to do. So the steps that take us on the left-hand side basically are going to help us to achieve the vision. But it's still not enough. Because the realities are, you could have a great mission, you could have a great vision, you could have a great strategic plan. But if you don't have a development plan to support what it is that you're doing on the strategic plan side, then the realities are it's going to collapse. I'm going to do a session later on in the forum, I think it's later on today, where basically I'm going to talk about why strategic plans fail. Because 90%, interestingly enough, of strategic plans fail. They fail because basically we have a great plan. There's nothing wrong with the plan. We have a great mission. It's nothing wrong with the mission. And certainly the vision is compelling. But if we don't have the resources in order to be able to accomplish the strategic plan, the realities are it all collapses. So it's very important that we understand how this whole picture really plays together. On the development plan, there are just a few areas. You know, in order to have a successful development plan, you need time, you need money, and you need the involvement of others. And we certainly need the involvement of the Lord Jesus Christ in our work. So the development plan is something that we really need to do, and that needs to be focused on to the same level of extent level as would be expected. Now, I don't know if I can even move at this next slide. Is there somebody that can do that for me, or no?
Lindsay has your four characteristics of highly successful organizations with the planning pyramid up there, Jerry. I don't see any slides after that on the same document.
Okay. Well, boy, am I embarrassed. I am so sorry. I think this is a very, very important visual. And to me, I was with an organization not too long ago in Texas, and I was sitting there talking with a group of people that are a part of this organization that's just associated with the Wycliffe Bible Translators. In the middle of the meeting, a gentleman came in to the office, and he says, "You know, Jerry," he says, I heard you speak 25 years ago. And I'm thinking, like, 25 years ago. He says, I remember you speaking 25 years ago. I says, "What did I say? Did you remember anything?" He says, "The one thing I remembered was the fact of that pyramid, because that pyramid showed to me in a broad picture that these are the things that need to happen in order for us to get from here to there." And when that was, when we realized that, then we realized that we could do this. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, my very, very poor presentation, and I so apologize, I'm totally embarrassed, but I am so grateful for the opportunity of being able to show you how we can do that, because the realities are this is something well worth the opportunity to fulfill our work in the areas where we provide our services. So, Greg, why don't you take us to the next step? I honestly have no idea where we are in terms of time, and right, so we're going to figure this out.
We've still got a lot of time. Are you hoping to show people the kind of the segmented pyramid over 5 years? Because we've seen the pyramid, and we know, at least in broad strokes, as you shared, where the strategic plan and development plan come into that. If we take a five-minute break, I could pull up my version of that slide, Jerry, and then show that.
Okay, very good. Why don't we do that?
Okay. Let's just do a 5-minute stretch break, and we'll be back in a minute. Thanks. I think what we'll do, I won't belabor a lot of what Jerry shared, but just kind of got to move some lovely faces out of my way so I can see the screen better. Is really kind of look at a little more detailed look, and this is what Jerry tried to talk through a little bit ago. But really is looking at the vision at the top. That's kind of where you're headed. That's your horizon, whether that's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever your vision tends to be. It really is a matter of looking at where are we going and how will we get there. I used to have a friend who was a sailor. He had a small sailboat that he used on lakes here in the Midwest U.S. And he always told the story that, you know, if you set out from New York City and you wanted to sail across the Atlantic to the coast of France, but if you start anywhere from 3 to 4 degrees off course, you end up sailing to South Africa because you've not stayed on course. You've not stayed on your horizon. So that vision is simply our horizon. And I see a lot of organizations now not even going out 5 years on a strategic plan, but going out in even 3-year increments, in large part because of situations like COVID or like the collapse and the recession back in 2008, 2009. So those are things we can kind of take account of and kind of look into. And then at the bottom of the pyramid is our mission. And that really is what drives what we do every day and how we make sure that we are on track every day when we sit down to our desk, when we have our staff meetings, we're meeting with potential donors or potential volunteers or champions. Those are the things that we do every day. And then on either side of that, the strategic planning and the development planning really go hand in hand in lockstep with each other. So this could be broken out by quarter between year one and year two. It could be broken out by month. It really could be broken out any way that's best for you. And that may be, in many cases, we find that's attached to your board meetings or your trustee meetings. So you make sure you have updates for them every time you get together with your board or with your trustees. But making sure that you have those things attached. We've done some things over the years with organizations, and I'm not sure if I have the slide here or not. Yeah, here we go. where we see organizations as they develop their ministries, that a large part of those, I think it's 98%, have a mission statement, but only 56% have a vision statement, 12% have a strategic plan, and only like 3.6% actually have a development plan. So coming back to this, so a lot of people have a mission statement. They think they know what they're about. Many people, though, don't know the course. Little over that half have 56% have a vision statement of where they want to go. They know where they want to go. And that was Jerry's term when he said that vision equals mission accomplished. We do everything that we need to do to accomplish our mission, then we will see our vision realized. Example I like to use is out of the book of Nehemiah in the Bible. And it's one I just has always been an important book to me and one that really means a lot to me. So I think about all the different times that Nehemiah had to change his plans in the middle of that story. And he had a vision, and the vision wasn't necessarily to build a wall. The wall became a means to an end. But the vision was to reconvene the people of God, the Israelites, back together in the city that God created and designated for them, and that they would be a holy people and follow God again. Because the whole Old Testament was what? A story of when they would follow him, then they wouldn't follow him. Then they'd follow him, and they wouldn't follow him. So the vision was not to build a wall. The vision was to get God's people back together. But the mission then became to build a wall to make sure that people were safe in order to do that. So, but if you look at, so Nehemiah prayed in chapter 1. In chapter 2, he approached the king and asked for permission to go, kind of take this leave of absence to go build the wall. But essentially, chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, and chapter 6, Nehemiah had to change his plans in terms of how to build the wall. His mission changed slightly. His vision never changed. So as we go through a 3 or 5 year planning process, we know those plans are going to change. And that's okay, but we know what the vision is. We know the horizon that we're headed toward. So we make sure that even though we're changing plans, we can still make that a long-term goal. If you think about the GPS in your car, for instance, and if you have it set to take you on a certain route, and then all of a sudden it says there's a detour, there's a road blockage, there's an accident, and it takes you a different direction. It doesn't change your destination. It simply takes you a different direction to get you back to where you want to be. And sometimes our strategic planning and development planning are like that. And I really focus on the ING, the planning, not strategic plan, it's strategic planning, because it's going to change. Same with development planning. But so many organizations we work with have a strategic plan, and they really think it's great, and it's wonderful, and they put it in a book, or they put it in a thumb drive, and it goes in a drawer, and they never look at it again. Or they don't have a development plan that's going to help them achieve their strategic plan. So the board builds a strategic plan that says, this is where we're going. Now you people who are responsible for development, you go out and figure out a way to raise the money. But they really need to be in lockstep. They really need to be connected. So all those goals, whether you're reporting on them annually, quarterly, monthly, those are really the goals that both the strategic planning as well as development planning are pursuing. So that means you may know that in year 4, you have a pretty big amount of money you have to raise because of new buildings, because of new equipment that you need. You can start to build up to that in year 4 and not just be surprised all of a sudden that by year 4, you have to raise a large amount of money. And in smaller organizations, if you are the development planning person, if you are the executive director, and you don't have a lot of staff to share, many times we can help find volunteers who will help us get this mission accomplished as we pursue moving toward our vision. So let me just stop there, and let's just kind of open up for some open Q&A. We've kind of loaded a lot of information for you. I'll leave this up for a little bit. So I cannot see everybody in the classroom right now. So if you want to raise your hand or just chime in with some thoughts, observations, kind of where are you in the strategic planning process? Do you have a plan? Do you see a way that your development plan is or is not matching up to your strategic plan? Let's talk a little bit about that and see where people are just in your own ministry and own organization related to strategic planning and development planning.
Thanks so much, Greg, for participating and helping. I'd like to share with you something that basically I think you might find of interest. One of the real focuses of our ministries over the years have been, you know, basically outcomes. You know, how do we basically accomplish what it is that we really want to do? And there are a lot of organizations, many of whom have been a part of the European Leadership Forum over the last several years, where people are being asked, or they're being asked, they're asking people that basically are members of charitable foundations and organizations that really give money to organizations like yours. And there's one particular organization that I'm very, very familiar with that basically has a very, very interesting process. You know, usually I hear somebody that has something that they want to share. They want to get a foundation that will give them a grant that will help them to do that. And so my friend that works with this particular organization is very, very anxious to listen to what it is that people have to say, the opportunities they might be able to provide. And so if they were asked the question to the foundation director, would you be interested in considering a grant for our organization? The first thing he would say is, sure, that we would be more than anxious to do that, more than anxious to help you in any way that we can. Well, the next question that obviously is being asked by the individual is, well, what do I need to do? Well, he would say, there are two things that initially you need to do. You know, number one, it says, I want to get a copy of your mission statement. And so he basically says, so that's easy, we can do that for you. He says, what else do you need? He says, the only other thing we need from you is a list of people that were basically involved in your organization 10 years ago. In other words, you know, they were with your organization 10 years ago. Now it's 10 years later. And so if you give us that information, that's all that we need for right now. So what happens typically is he brings all of this information. He has now a mission statement, and he talks about, you know, what this mission statement does, and what he looks for is what this organization, you know, essentially is looking, you know, 10 years from now. And so basically he creates an environment where basically he sends emails to everybody that was with a student or with that organization 10 years ago. He looks at the mission statement and he articulates, or he basically looks at that mission statement and he says, okay, what would this look like 10 years from now if it was successful? And so they do surveys and they analyze all of these people 10 years from now. And then they're making a debate in terms of whether or not they're going to give a grant on the basis of the fact of the success of the organization's mission statement over a 10-year period. Now, stop and think about that for a moment. Stop and think about what your organization does, where you want it to be, evaluate it over a period of time, and ask yourself the question, does it justify, does the investment that you're wanting to get justify your effectiveness in being able to do what it is that you are committed to doing? And I think that exercise is a very, very good one. We've done it a lot with schools and colleges and universities, where we've gone to universities and said, we know what their mission statement is. We basically know who they were. We determine, you know, what it is that we think a person should look like, you know, 10 years from now, who had had the opportunity of being a part of the initial mission, and does it really reflect the fact that it's successful enough to justify us really making an investment for your organization? So I think that's a kind of an interesting topic that may be worth some consideration. What it is I want to talk to you today, and this is a fairly comprehensive process that we're going to go through in the next few minutes, but I want to share with you the five-step development process. The development, basically, there are five steps in the process, and I think to the degree that you understand them, you're really going to be able to move forward in terms of your organization. So let's move on, and we start with the first of the five-step processes. The first step is the identification of potential prospects. In other words, you want to build relationships with people. You want to have them engaged in the context of your ministry. And we need to identify these people with whom you would like to build a relationship. And it begins with people that you know. In other words, you know, oftentimes we feel like, well, we don't even know people that we really would like to have a relationship with. And so, you know, what do we do? Well, first of all, start with people that you know, family, friends, neighbors, businesses, colleagues, friends at church. All of those people represent what I call a universe. So think of a small circle. And within that circle of people that you know very, very well, people that you basically represent, those people that basically we included, family, friends, neighbors, and so forth. But you also have, your friends also know other people. In other words, I know 40 or 50 people. It used to be, you know, years ago when we were talking about this discussion, that the average, what we call the average universe of the average individual in America, and this was probably 20 or 30 years ago, was about 40 people. That actually, there were about 40 people that you know that if you were facing a crisis, you could go to them, and the realities are they would listen to what it is that you have to say because you've earned their confidence by virtue of the fact of the relationship that you have. Well, now it's kind of interesting because people are thinking, you know, how large is your universe? I mean, it's not just your friends, but now you have many, many more friends. One of the favorite things that I like to do when I go to a restaurant, especially if there's a millennial in the room and they're getting ready to, you know, take my order for my dinner or lunch or breakfast, whatever the case might be. And I'll usually ask them, I said, well, are you on Facebook? And they say, yeah, I'm on Facebook. I says, how many friends do you have? She says, 3,415. And all of these people on, you know, that person basically said, these are all my friends. Well, most of them don't even know any of them. But the realities are, you know, we have to begin the process of development by identifying people that we can begin a relationship with. So let's kind of go on from there. Getting to know others. How do you get to find people? How do we get people to, you know, be exposed to what it is that we do, the ministry to which we've committed ourselves? Well, here's one way you could do it, is invite others to attend an event. You know, conduct an open house or host a special lecture or a special event like a musical theater or a concert or whatever the case might be. But those are all ways of being able to bring people, to expose them to what it is that you're doing. So consider hosting an event. Introduce yourself and your organization. You know, share information about your work, always providing something that they can take home with them. So let's say that you go to an open house and basically you're being introduced to the organization. You're showing them what it is that you do. You're allowing them the opportunity to respond to questions and all the kinds of things that most all of us would do on a regular basis. And then, you know, during that period of time, because you really want to take advantage of that, because it's one thing to have a meeting and to have people come to the meeting. But if you don't give them the opportunity of being able to participate in any kind of way as it relates to the ongoing ministry of the organization and what might be of interest to them, then the realities are you've lost the opportunity. And so what we want you to do is what a process that we call bridging. Now think of a bridge as, if you want to use a bit of a diagram that might stick with you because it's one of the diagrams that I share periodically with organizations that they really often relate to. So if you have a piece of paper and you're sitting there as I'm talking, here's what I'd like you to do. Make a little ocean, okay? Just make a little line that basically reflects ocean, and then underneath that, put some stick fishes there, you know, people, you know, or all the fish that are in the sea, okay? And in the middle of this sea, put a little knob there, and we're going to make it an island, okay? So in the middle of this island, this sea of opportunity, there is an island. And that island, on that island, there's a beautiful house, okay? So try to get that image in your mind. Here we have a sea, in the sea of prospects, there are all kinds of people there, and you all know that. There are all kinds of, I mean, you have potential prayer partners. You have, you know, volunteers, a lot of volunteers that would be available to you. They're all down in the sea of prospects, but most of them don't have a clue who you are. And think of other people in organizations that are a part of the sea of prospects that you'd really like to engage people, wealthy people, all kinds of people basically are there, but they don't have a clue who you are and what it is that you do. So we all can relate to that because we know that their resources are available, but we don't know how to gather and engage in those resources. Well, think about taking an arrow, and if you can take an arrow from the sea of prospects up to the front porch of the house, put a little front porch in the house. And that front porch of the house is just basically an opportunity for you to go to an organization to be exposed to what it is that they do. And when you do that, figuratively, you kind of open the door, don't you? And you let them peek into what it is that you do. And basically, they have a wonderful experience. And they're grateful for the opportunity to be exposed to something that they really didn't know much about. And usually when that event is over, what typically we do is we close the door, say, thanks for coming, God bless you, and let's go home. Well, I mean, the realities are most of you or many of you do that on a fairly regular basis. You have great events, expose people to something that basically was quite meaningful. And at the end of the day, we say, you know, God bless you, thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing you sometime in the future. Well, usually nothing happens there. But the realities are that a bridge is something that you need to do. And think of the bridge as this. You're on the front steps, you're on the front porch of the house, and then you're going to walk over the threshold, and you're going to end up in the foyer. And so you're extending essentially an invitation. Won't you come in and let us really show you around what it is that is happening within the context of our organization? The process of extending an invitation is essentially a bridge. You want to move them from one place to another. And then the successful result of a bridge is actually a relationship. So let me give you some examples of bridging really, really quickly. If I were, let's say that you come to my organization, let's say I'm the administrator of a Christian school or an organization. And so at the end of the meeting, after we've had a wonderful time together, I stand up and say, hey, listen, thank you so much for coming. It was just really great to have you here. You've seen some of the videos that we provided that talk about what it is that we're doing. Many of you have experienced situations that you found to be interesting. And you perhaps have heard the testimonies of some of the kids and some of the people that are part of our organization. And I'd just like to share with you five or six ways that you could be a part of our organization. You know, maybe you'd like, and I give them a card, which basically has a number of options wherein they might consider opportunities. So you might want to, you know, just pray for us. If you know what it is that we're doing, we'd love for you to be one of our prayer partners. And we're very happy, you know, if you would like to be one of our prayer partners, we can send you a 31-day prayer guide. And you can pray for us on a daily basis on what it is that, you know, God is doing in our organization and how you can support us in terms of prayer. So if you are interested in that, just check that box. We'll make sure you get a 31-day prayer guide that you can put on your refrigerator in a magnet or something of that nature. You know, there's other ways that you can be involved. If you'd like to be a volunteer, check there. We have lots of opportunity volunteer opportunities. So if you have an interest there, just check that box. That would be fine. You know, if you'd like to receive a copy of our VIP newsletter, this is an email letter that basically we send it once a month and it shares some of the issues that are taking place. And if you're interested in what it is we're doing and how we're going about doing it, you're a very important person to us. And we want to send you the information that basically is going to enable you to understand better who it is and what we do. You might share with them that you need in-kind contributions. And so if you have something that you want to give to our organization, then just check that box. We'll make sure that we provide what it is that you need in order for us to take advantage of what it is that you really want us to become involved in. I could go on and on with six or seven or even eight different ways in which you could be participants in what it is that we do. Well, each one of those participants is essentially a bridge. And now we have the opportunity of really being able to grow in that relationship. So bridging is essentially, the failure to bridge is the greatest mistake that we make in development. You bring a lot of people to the front porch, but if you never extended them the invitation, you've lost opportunity. So bridging is something that you must do virtually in everything that you do, allowing people the opportunity to do what it is they're not going to expend the energy to try to figure out how to deal what it is you want them to do. So the realities are, if you're not going to expend the invitation or the opportunities, then the realities are you're not going to have the opportunities that you really want. So identification of prospects is very, very important. That's just a few other things here in relationship to this discussion, and we can kind of move forward. A prospect is a prospect only when you have their name and contact information. In other words, you say, we got all these people that came. I mean, we had 400 people that showed up to the open house. Great. How many names and addresses did we get? Well, we didn't get any, but we had a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of encouragement. Well, the realities are you didn't accomplish anything for all practical purposes. So you really, I mean, one of the aspects of what it is that we need to do is basically to get the names and contact information of people that basically we can begin the process of building a relationship. It's one thing to say that you have a lot of friends or potential prospects, but it's quite another to have the information you need in order to grow your ministry and outreach. Okay, that's number one. So number one, identify people with whom you'd like to build a relationship and kind of think of ways that you might be able to do that. Well, virtually, not everybody is going to be in the same relationship as the person next to them in line. In other words, there are a lot of people. We have a lot of prospects now. We're saying, oh man, look at this. We've got 500 prospects here. Now what do we do with them? And we realize intuitively that not every one of them is in the same relationship as the person next in line alphabetically. So there are three kinds of prospects. And so now I have an organization, Habitat for Humanity is one of our clients. They have 11 million people on their database. 11 million people on their database. And I can tell you, and we're going to kind of walk through this over the period of time that we have remaining, but I can tell you where virtually every one of those people, all 11 million people, are in relationship to the organization, and what we did in the context of that ministry to grow that ministry as one of the greatest organizations in the world today. So here are the three kinds of prospects that we all have. First of all, a nuclear prospect. Now, a nuclear prospect is someone, some part of an organization that benefit directly from the services you provide. Now, let's say that you're a part of a Christian school, for example. A nuclear prospect would be someone that basically benefits directly from the services that we provide because their child is a part of their school. And so they, as an organization, are benefiting directly from the services that the organization provides. But there's another group of prospects, and we call those affinity prospects. Now, an affinity prospect represents a group of people who benefit indirectly from the services you provide. In other words, they don't experience the same thing that a nuclear prospect does, but they are obviously involved in some degree with the organization. So, for example, if my grandson, I have three grandsons, which are no longer children anymore. But, you know, we really appreciated that organization, the Christian school at which they attended, because it really impacted their lives. But they were affinity prospects. I mean, they were cousins and neighbors and people that basically were aware of what it is that we were going. We didn't know them as well as the others, but the realities are we did know that they were interested in what it is we're doing. So they have some sense of a relationship with you. And then the third area is what we call a fringe prospect. And this group represents people with whom you have no relationship. In other words, you know that they're there. You know community leaders are there. You know philanthropic people are there. We know that business leaders are there. We know that they're there. Wealthy people are there. Foundations are there. We know all about that. But the realities are we don't know anything about them. So here now you have a database. You're beginning to create, you know, relationships. And we know that within the numbers of people that we have in our database, they're going to be in one of three broad categories. They're going to be nuclear prospects, affinity prospects, or fringe prospects. Okay? Now I'm going to go through this rapidly because there's just an awful lot to do here. So we've now come to a point where we said, okay, we know that we have all these people in our database, and we have some kind of an idea in terms of what their relationship might be with us. Well, you know, we restarted, and I'm sure you remember this as we were beginning all of this earlier in this session. But We used the analogy of falling in love, didn't we? And so the third aspect of the developmental process, identify number one, qualify number two, cultivate number three. And cultivating, using the analogy of falling in love, is this next step. And it's kind of analogous to courtship. And I realize that certain practices are different in areas of the world, but courtship was, really a great time in our lives, and Sue and I were courting one another and determining whether or not this is what it is we felt God was going to lead us to do. So how do we grow relationships? And so let me give you three thoughts that you might want to consider. You need to get to know them, don't you? So you can grow a relationship by getting to know others, and things like events and activities are excellent ways to expose your ministry to other people. So again, going back to what it is that we did at the first session, identifying prospects, you want them to come to something. You want them to be able to experience what it is that the organization represents. The next step is involvement. You really want to get people involved. And the more people become involved in what you do, the more committed they are. And you need to provide them ways. How, you think about this, how could someone become involved in your organization? Well, they could become a volunteer. That certainly is an obvious one. But there are all kinds of other ways that they could become involved. And think about ways that people could become involved in your organization, because to the extent that they become involved, they're taking a kind of a part of the ownership of what it is the organization represents. And then finally, the third area is donation. Now, by the way, I don't like that fact. I'd like to change that, but I'll explain that in just a few moments. But the realities are AID, I just couldn't, I had to keep it only because I could remember it forever. And so when I talk about donations here, I'm talking about people who commit to you are making a statement of their interest. That doesn't necessarily involve money as much as it represents a commitment to becoming involved in what it is that you do. People think of it this way, people that go out of their way to support what it is that you do that goes far beyond what it is you would expect them to do. And so they're making a commitment or a sacrifice or a donation. And basically that is, allows us to be able to understand, where they might be in terms of their commitment to the organization. Let's go on. Commitment, and I'm going to go back here because there's a few things here. I went forward before I was ready to stop. But think about cultivation again. Let me just kind of go over this really, really quickly. If you had a database, all right, now we have a database. We know that we have nuclear affinity and fringe prospects within the database. And within the database, we also know that we have individuals that we want to grow in their relationship with one another. And so AID enables us to be able to say, okay, if we had people that were attending and if they were involved and they were making contributions, then they reality are, we'd call them an A prospect, right? If they had done all three of those things. Now, some of them, have attended something, but they haven't involved and haven't donated. So the realities are, our goal is to get them to become involved in something. And so we provide opportunities, a variety of opportunities where they can become involved. And so they've done two of the three. In other words, they've attended, they've been involved, and they make a commitment. Now, that commitment might be a sacrifice doing and over and above what it is that realistically you would expect to happen or as a result of that particular communication. AID, okay, so think of it this way. If they did all three of those things, attendance and involvement and donation, we'd call them an A prospect. If they'd done two of the three, we'd call them a B prospect because they'd attended and they've been involved. They would D if they had been making sacrifices, then they've attended, involved, and made donations. And then there's let's say it's an A, B, C, D thing, that A prospects are the best prospects, obviously. B's are the next best, that's involvement. D's are the ones that have made donations, whatever the case might be. And then the other ones, basically they're D prospects and we don't know anything about them. We don't know anything about what it is that they've done in the past. the realities are that if you were sitting and writing a letter or wanting to communicate with somebody, the realities are that 90% of the people that you would talk to would probably listen to what it is that you have to say, because you've really delved yourself into the relationship. In other words, you've involved in your doing. And the realities are, if you're going to send them a letter, if you want to get them engaged in something, that group of people is going to be the most likely to want to support you. Now, you know, there are other people that basically, you know, have not done, they've never made a contribution. They've never done some of the other things. But if they've done two of the three, there's a 60% likelihood that a person would be able to, would want to be involved if, in fact, we were extending an invitation. If they've done one of the three, in other words, the only thing that they've done is attended something, there's about a 30% likelihood that they're going to do anything if invited the opportunity. And if you finish and you don't have anything, then the realities are there's less than that 10% likelihood that they're going to respond to anything that you have to do. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. I know I'm running through this quickly, but I really want to make sure that we get as much of this as we can. Okay, now let's talk about commitment. So we've identified, number one, qualify, number two, cultivate, number three, and number four is to seek a commitment. So this fourth step involves inviting others to join with you in growing your organization. And for that, there's a lot of ways that you can do that. I like a formal proposal. If I am ready to start talking to someone about engaging with the organization, then I want to, you know, basically, you know, present to them an opportunity that allows them the opportunity to become engaged in very, very meaningful ways in support of our organization. And I do that by creating a formal proposal. Now, I can give you samples of formal proposals, but usually they have a cover, you know, that basically shares the organization and what it is that, and usually it's personalized to the individual that I want to visit with and to share with them the opportunity of participating. So the formal proposal would include at least five things. It's listed here in the PowerPoint that I have provided here for you that's available. The first step, the things that you want to include in this proposal is the mission of your organization. Why do you exist? They need to know that, because that's the essence of who it is you are. And that's why mission is so very, very important to the whole developmental process. And then you want to talk to them about a brief history. There's some people that in the UK, we were talking to a couple of them just earlier this week, you know, that basically they can walk down a street in London and they can see a haberdashery, from 1736. In other words, they have a lot of credibility only by virtue of the fact that they have history. The one thing that I, you know, regret, at least I suppose at one level, is that, you know, my history is getting a little bit longer as well. And but the realities are, it gives you credibility. The older you are, the more credible you are, right? I mean, you'd like to think so. And the realities are, the longer an organization has existed and has been using and being used of the Lord, the realities are, it's a credible organization because of the success that they've had over many, many years. You want to provide a vibrant description of your vision for the future. In other words, start talking about the big vision on the pyramid. You know, share, you know, when people were talking to Bill Bright, you know, he says, let me just share with you. And Bill was really quite an interesting guy. I had the opportunity of working with him and that organization for several years. And the realities are that, you know, Bill could tell a great story. He said, close your eyes and let me take you to Papua New Guinea. And then he's just kind of walking me through, you know, a jungle that finally opens up to an open area where there's a lot of people that basically are preparing to hear and see the work of the Lord Jesus Christ for the first time in their lives. And that was the vision. It was a vibrant description. And you just basically, you know, couldn't hardly stop not doing anything because of the realization of what it is that was going to impact in their lives. Okay, then you need an outline of your strategic plan. We have a mission, we have a vision, we've got a vision, and then we've got a plan. Here's our plan and what it is we're going to do. In the case of Habitat, or not Habitat, but of crew was that the strategic plan was that we want to make sure that 4.3 billion people have the opportunity of seeing the Jesus film by the year 2000. And that happened between 1978 and 2000. All of that happened, and that was the strategic plan. And then the final thing that you want to do when you're making this professional and hopefully a personal commitment or a personal invitation to join you is to provide a wide range of ways in which they can commit to support. This is one of the big things that I'm very, very committed to is I want everybody to say yes to something. In other words, if I'm just saying, you know, would you like to give a contribution to $1 million? And that's the only thing that I ever say, I might get the $1 million and I might not. And if I don't get it, I probably never hear or see the person again, because they're going to say, what gave you the audacity of saying that I could give $1 million when you don't even know me? Well, that's obviously not something that you would want to happen. So what we do is we provide a variety of ways. And again, I've gone ahead of myself on the screen. So let me, before I stop that, let's just talk a little bit about, you know, the what I call the opportunity page, because in every personalized proposal, I always include, and I would recommend that you do the same thing, that I always include a series of ways in which they could become involved. And all of, at least many of which, is something that anybody could respond to if in fact they were interested at all in what it is that we're doing. So when we present a proposal, we say, okay, there's maybe six or eight areas that we're saying, okay, you know, you could pray for us. If you love what it is we're doing, if you really believe in what it is we're doing, we really want you to pray for us. We'd like you to be a volunteer, you know, kinds of things that basically, if people have an interest at all in what it is we want them to do, we want them to be able to say yes to something and come up with some questions that basically they can say yes to. And here's another clue, just to remind you, is that the trouble with getting old is that you remember what the last statement that was you were just going to make. So let me kind of move on that. But the reality is, give them the opportunity to be able to respond to something. And you want it to do, you want them to do it then. That was my point. In other words, give them a place where they can check it and they can, you know, say, okay, I can do this or I can do that. It's kind of interesting when you do this in a large situation where you have a lot of people. And we do a lot of organizations like that and in situations that would be somewhat analogous to what it is that what I'm talking about now. And we give them this little card that says, okay, here are some ways that you can become involved in what it is that we're doing. And would you please check if you want this, that, and the other thing? We talked a little bit about that already earlier. Well, the realities are, if you say, you know, we'd like you to just, you know, take a few minutes to do this now. And when you leave, put it in a box, you know, so that we know that you were here and here are ways that we might be able to support you and provide the information that you want. But if they walk out and they don't make the decision, it's kind of interesting. There's about a 70% likelihood that if you do it and you give them the opportunities to make a decision, especially not necessarily in a major campaign or something, but whenever you're asking somebody for something, at least give them some opportunities wherein they can participate. And if they walk away and they don't do anything, the realities are there's about a 30% loss because they get into the car on the way home. They say, oh, yeah, this was really great. It was wonderful. And they're sharing it with your wife and your friends and so forth. And it says, yeah, we really want to be involved in this. And then all of a sudden you get a phone call from the babysitter who says, you know, the baby's sick and you need to get home. And all of a sudden everything that was really very impactful in terms of the relationship and what it is that you really wanted to do from the event that you just left, all of a sudden we've just lost that. And remember, again, one of the most important statements that I made earlier is that we want, you know, people to respond. And it's emotion that brings us together. Always remember that statement. It's emotion that brings us together in relationships. It's rationalism that keeps us there. That first statement is an emotional one, and you have to grow those emotions, you know, and provide opportunities wherein people can become involved. And basically, if you don't, then the realities are you're likely to lose them. Okay, so now we're going to get to the last part of it. And we call this the sustaining the involvement of others. Okay, so now we've identified people with whom we'd like to build a relationship. That's number one. Number two, we want to qualify them. We know they're all different. We want to begin to understand who they are, what it is that's important to them, and so forth, and how to move them up the ladder from where it is they are to where it is that we would hope that they would go. The third thing is we want to cultivate those relationships. And that's I have teams of people with organizations that we work with that basically focus on cultivation. You know, if somebody's never done anything, we want to invite them to something. You know, if they've never been involved in anything, we want to provide some opportunities wherein they can do that, if in fact they have the interest in doing it and so forth. So we want to cultivate those relationships and to move them into a greater place in terms of their relationship with the organization. And then we went there from, you know, engagement. You know, how do we, you know, basically we've identified, qualified, cultivated, and now we want to provide opportunities where they can become involved. We want to allow them the opportunity to see that. But now we want to sustain them. And there are two parts of that whole process, as we've talked about. On the left-hand side of the image that I gave you earlier in this session, or in a couple of sessions ago, is that in the first part of the what I call the relational continuum, you know, basically you're going from someone that didn't know anything to basically a commitment. Remember, we were talking about the greatest analogy of falling in love is marriage. And so, you know, we started with not knowing someone. I met Sue, I saw her, I liked her, I thought she was brilliant, I thought she was funny, and I really did enjoy her. You know, as the time went on, we had this, you know, significant meeting in the meantime of that whole courtship process, where I began to say to her, you know, if we were to take this to the next level, if we, all of a sudden, I and me was early, now it's we, you always want to go to we. You want them to be able to say, you know, here are ways that you can be involved in us, and we would love for you to do that. So that was AID, that was all on that left side of the continuum, from the beginning when Sue and I first met each other to the marriage and when we committed ourselves to one another, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, until death do us part. Okay, that was it. Now we're into a new phase of our life. And that's, you know, basically how do we sustain a vital relationship with somebody that we really deeply care about? And that's the CIA function, which basically CIA stands for an acronym. C stands for communicating, continuing and maintaining communications with people that are part of your organization, providing ongoing opportunities to maintain their involvement, and constantly reminding others of your appreciation of their involvement. That's CIA. And stop and think about it, even in a marital relationship. You know, when, and I think I gave this illustration earlier, but when, you know, Sue and I, you know, we had our honeymoon and you know, it was just, we reflected on all the things that had happened to prepare us for that particular moment in our lives. And, you know, as time went on, you know, we weren't talking quite as much as we used to. We, you know, when we were courting, you know, they would kick us out of restaurants because they wanted to go home so that they could, you know, come back to work the next day. And so we'd leave, close the door, get in our car, and continue to talk. Well, now as time goes on, we don't typically, or we oftentimes don't typically communicate in the same way. And we're not involved in oftentimes in the same ways that we were as we were courting. And we sometimes don't express appreciation in the ways that we should. And so we can do that on an individual basis, but we can also do it as an organizational basis. And Sue and I had to work on that in our lives. And I suspect those of you that are married and have had similar experiences had to do that in your life as well. But in the case of development, if I'm looking at your situation, I would say, you know, you want to have, and I gave the illustration of Billy Graham, I think, earlier. Billy Graham, you know, was a great evangelist, and he would have a service in London, and then the next week he'd be in Spain, and then the next week he'd be in Madrid, and then the next day he'd be, you know, in Frankfurt or some other place. And he would do that year after year after. That was what his vision was. I mean, that was his vision, and that was really his giftedness. And Billy was very, very good at that. But the realities are, you know, there was still this follow-up aspect of what it is that needed to happen. And my wife is a great example of this, because Sue came to know the Lord at a Billy Graham campaign in Chicago, Illinois. And she was a 20-year-old graduate of university, and she came to this great event in Chicago, and she came to know the Lord. And she went forward, and she was met with somebody when she got there. And it was a lovely lady who was probably in her 70s or 80s, and she was saying, "Dan, you know what it is that you just did?" And she began to share that, and she prayed with my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time. And that lady gave her some information. And for almost a year, that lady stayed with her, gave her information, talked to her, and finally got her into a church and so forth. And that was all part of that ministry. And there were thousands of other people that were doing the same thing with these people that were really coming to faith in Christ. And so they were working on one side of the continuum, and the other side of the continuum, you know, Billy was working on. And we need to do that with our organizations. You might have a group of people within your organization that basically are the acquisition people, okay? They're the Billy Grahams. They're the ones that are basically sharing who it is you are and what it is that you want to do, and all those wonderful things that basically is, you know, you can accomplish in your ministry. So, you may be, that's where you're hard is, and this is really what you want to be involved in. But there are another group of people that don't know how to do that, but they know how to do other things. They know how to communicate with people. They know how to get them involved, and they stay in contact by sending letters and Christmas cards and the kinds of things that basically say, "You really mean a lot to us, and we really want you to know that." And so essentially in development, you have two broad areas, the acquisition and the sustaining. Let's just say a prayer before we leave. Father in heaven, thank you for this time that we can enjoy together. Thank you for the opportunities that you've given us to serve you. We're grateful for those. We pray, Lord, that you would have enabled us to understand what it is that I was seeking to communicate today, and perhaps that we can find and do the things that we need to do in order to be able to grow organizations, not for our glory, but for the glory of God, to whom we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.